2 minutes. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and honorable members. This morning, we are having presentations from two institutions. That is the Tourism Enterprise Partnership and the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. On enterprise partnership, firstly, we feel honored to be graced by your presence in giving this presentation. And secondly, as chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, I think it is important on behalf of Parliament and on behalf of the committee to thank you for your role in the 2010 FIFA World Cup. I'm trying to be correct. and your performance for making South Africa a very, very proud destination and a very, very memorable destination with dreams that may make a lot of people revisit our shores. We thank you very much for your role that you played, given that you are a very, very important part of the tourism fraternity in South Africa. Once more, we say very, very thank you very, very much, and we regard you as very, very important in this field. Secondly, given our success in the mega event, in our event that we have had, we have a challenge of optimizing the legacy of the 2010 FIFA World Cup, and then in the process, we wanted to hear from you how it relates to the national priorities that results ultimately in jobs and sustainable livelihoods, like the priorities being an inclusive growth with decent jobs and sustainable livelihoods, rural development, health, education, and reduction of crime and corruption. Given these national priorities, how do we fare? Does our product talk to accelerating an inclusive growth? That is the question. Over to you, ladies and gentlemen. The first presentation will be from Tourism Enterprise Partnership for 45 minutes. Then the second one will be from Tourism Business Council of South Africa for 45 minutes. Then after that, we shall have discussions, deliberations for the next 60 minutes, item number 3. And then there shall be announcements for 3 minutes, and then we'll have closure. So from now to about 5 to 11, we shall have a presentation from Tourism Enterprise Partnership. It doesn't have to be 45 minutes, but if it is longer than that, then it has to be 45 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good morning to the Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Siva Pillay, the Chief Executive of the Tourism Enterprise Partnership. And I hope to get through the presentation in 30 minutes, so there will be additional time for discussion. Tourism Enterprise Partnership, I will refer to as TEP from now on, really will be presenting on the enterprise partnerships with the focus on job creation and sustainable livelihoods as part of the national priorities. These are some of the entrepreneurs that you see pictures of that own tourism businesses, small businesses around the country. I would like to cover the TEP strategy first to give you an idea of how we're handling this program nationally on behalf of the Business Trust and the National Department of Tourism. So there is a public-private sector component to it. Then I would like to share with you some of the very positive partnerships that are driving this program. And finally, some achievements in terms of the numbers of small businesses we're dealing with. Firstly, I would like to confirm that TEP exists basically for the growth and development of small tourism businesses. And the how of the way we do this is to select them around the country and register them. And we have provincial offices who offer business advisory services to them. We then spend over 50% of our time on skills development and skills transfer to these small businesses. We offer them limited financial assistance for enterprise development services only, such as marketing materials, their grading fees, and exhibition attendance. And lastly, we have public and private partnerships that we have developed in support of these businesses. Before we go forward, I thought I'd share with you the structure of the board for Tourism Enterprise Partnership. It's a Section 21 company, a not-for-profit company. So this is the company run by this board, and through a partnership approach, meets with the department and meets with the Business Trust. On the top left corner, you will see Mr. Rick Manel, who is the chairman of the board. Below him, you will see a former TEP product, which is Mr. Bernard Marobe, who owns Mankwe Safaris and is now serving on the board. And he was the first Emerging Tourism Entrepreneur Award winner. And he's a very successful person out at Sun City. And so his experience is shared on the board. Below him, you'll see our DDG of tourism. This is Niswa Nkulumayo, who also adds value to the strategic direction this company should take. And not to labor going through all of them, but just look at the top corner on the right. Is a former CEO of SA Tourism, Mr. Muketsi Masola, who's still on the board. He's now with Imperial Tourism Company. And at the bottom, the latest addition is Mr. Tom Boardman, who found it strong enough to make a contribution. These are all voluntary board members, by the way. And he has just joined the board, and we're hoping that his understanding of small business development will also help working with the banks and supporting small businesses around the country. If I could just move forward on the strategy. It's basically two components. Very simply put, it's product development at the bottom, but product development must lead to market access, because developing small businesses in isolation and leaving them alone is not going to give them increased turnover, a growth of their business, and thus job creation. If you look at the bottom of that slide, the ultimate objectives of TEP is to focus on jobs, sustainability, and help with transformation of this industry. And we're talking only small businesses in tourism, as opposed to the very solid structure of big businesses that have been there for a long time. And through partnerships is one of the main ways we take these small businesses to market, whether it's at Indaba or ITB in Berlin or World Travel Market in London. It's through partners like SA Tourism that open doors to get the small businesses talking to tour operators, as well as some private companies like the Teve Tourism Group. And that's a snapshot of the strategy. The red rings are all about the new focus towards bringing in rural and start-up businesses. For the first 2 years, TEP was just trying to register the performing businesses around the country. And with the new initiative last year, the national initiatives, we're saying we can now look at product development in rural areas and look for businesses and evaluate them to assist with startups. And if some of them are good enough and are performing well, which we believe so, we will help them with market access. So we will link them up with other businesses to sell them, both domestically and internationally. The support interventions can take many forms, and I'm just illustrating to you now that at the bottom of the support interventions, we've now included a tourism awareness program, because we're talking about businesses just wanting to get into tourism, and we want to attract people in the rural areas who are keen to listen to this tourism awareness training module to figure whether they do want to fit into the tourism sector. The toolkits training, we train some 3,000 and just over 3,000 small businesses in tourism a year on TEP's toolkits on how to perform in the tourism sector. The next level we've added is customer service standards based on the recent experience of the FIFA Soccer World Cup. We saw that customer service levels actually improved during the World Cup when our people responded to this flood of tourists. And we believe that customer service still is an area for the country to work on, and especially small businesses. We're throwing a module on training for them in that area. The next level that we spend, we actually pay for these courses for these businesses. We did business skills training, which is 4 modules by 2 days. And a business owner goes through that to improve their performance. And this we did around 700 or 800 in the last year. The mentorship program is actually very well performing businesses, but we feel that you cannot sit there and try and train them in a classroom. It's better to get them a seasoned mentor from the industry so that they can learn on the fly as they are running their businesses. This is becoming a very, very popular program in all provinces, where we're getting big industry players like the City Lodge Group, for example, saying, can you please provide your general managers of your hotels to work with an owner of a small business to share with them, to transfer the skills of all the pitfalls of growing to the size of a city lodge group. And they welcome that. They actually have, I'll share with you the numbers, at least 12 general managers assisting small businesses in tourism. And in each province, KZN and Western Cape are the biggest supporters of this mentorship program. Eastern Cape has just come on board as well. So it's really beginning to flourish. The clusters program is the next one where we can take up to 20 small businesses per city and group them for economies of scale and then packaging them as an experience to sell to tour operators, including for a domestic experience. For example, in Cape Town, we took all about 15 small businesses in and around the city, from the Boerkop Base to the District 6 Lodge, to a restaurant in Long Street, to walking tours, and all these little businesses trying to operate in isolation cannot do it on their own. But if TEP puts them into a heritage cluster, as we call it, and then offers them as a costed package to a tour operator, it's then beginning to make sense. And we can add the accommodation side to it and the tour operator, which is the transport element to that component. And lastly, the management development program is for the high flyers. We only do about 40 or 50 of the high flyers per year, and we tested it last year, and I'll show you the results of the high flyer program. This was about taking specialists to these high flyer businesses and working on growth strategies for them for 3 years in advance. Because whilst running their businesses, they do it year on year and mostly month on month, and it's about survival. And they don't seem to have the time to stop and focus on a long-term growth strategy for their business. For us, we want it to ultimately lead to more jobs. If they grow, it will create more jobs, and it will make them sustainable. So the experts that work through these high flyers have shown that even in a recession, they were able to show growth because they have a 3-year strategy in place. And I would like to share with you how we're taking the clustered products around the country and grouping them and then creating a network of these experiences so that any tour operator, whether it's Thompson's or Rennie's or Terre Tourism, can now look at TEP small businesses packaged into groups per city, and they can include them in their packages internationally and locally. And many corporates are keen to visit our small businesses. So we found a clever way to tell the story of South Africa, and we did it during the World Cup. We did it slightly before the World Cup, and we attracted at least 100 England fans whom we took on a coach around the country experiencing these TEP hidden treasures. We call them the hidden treasures products. If nobody really gets to them or nobody patches them into sales packages. So we said we'd develop the clusters. In the last year, we did these 8 clusters of grouped product. In Cape Town, we started with the first one in the city. The second one, we went up the west coast to Paternoster. So all the way from here to Paternoster, it includes the San Village Quatu as part of the experience. It includes the Paternoster Lodge, which is a hotel owned by a small business owner. And we then package that and are able to sell that out of Cape Town. In KwaZulu-Natal, we had the Durban cluster of small business products on Umhlanga Ridge. We've now included Pietermaritzburg, a history and heritage cluster including the battlefields, the Madiba story, as well as the Mahatma Gandhi story, all the sites that a visitor would want to see in one experience. And the same with Gauteng. It includes the Soweto experience from all the heritage sites in Soweto, which the English fans did and were astounded. And then it takes us all the way out to Maropeng, the cradle of humankind, and origin center at Wits University. So we're talking ancient history, which is unique to South Africa, and then the modern history, which is living South Africa. But it's all about meeting the people. Nelspruit is very much the same. It includes the Kruger experience. The Eastern Cape has also got a rich heritage experience around the Madiba bird site, and then takes into account some of the very special products, which I will share with you on one. Then we added that in this year, the new focus is rural. So, Mr. Chairman, we're saying we now want to focus on more rural clusters. So we've included Limpopo and Northwest, rather than just the urban experience. And they're a beautiful experience from the Modjadji Rain Queen in Limpopo and the Saikat Forest to Northwest, as I said to you, from the cradle to mining. So we're creating a patchwork of these experiences that we can sell to an international tour operator or a local tour operator. We then added the humankind story, which I told you about, from Cradle of Humankind to Mapungubwe to the battlefields, the Zulu history, and then in the Cape, the sand history and the Dutch history. We find that these international tourists, when we're speaking to them in London, Paris, and in Berlin, are more interested in this story of South Africa than just wanting to see Table Mountain and the winelands, and just wanting to see Sun City and Kruger. They're suddenly getting a picture of a multifaceted people's story of South Africa, which is lying dormant, because nobody is telling this story about South Africa. So the next one we add is what we call the modern history of South Africa, perhaps in the last 40 years, from Lily's Leaf Farm, which in 1963 is now a living monument of where Umkhonto was seized or captured, to adding the capture site of Madiba and Pietermaritzburg, and then we talk about all the other attractions there.
Howick, not Maritzburg.
Sorry, Howick, yes, just outside. So we use a base and we can, you know, you need to.
He knows his backyard.
Yeah. And the birthplace of Madiba, we included now Eastern Cape, and then Robben Island last, because normally the visitor comes here and just goes to Robben Island, and it's out of context, not understanding what's the full story. And we the English fans actually went to Robben Island and met the author of a book on football on Robben Island. They insisted. They brought the author, found the book, and they found the people who ran the Football Association on Robben Island. And I learned through reading this book that even our current president, Jacob Zuma, was a captain of a team on the island. And so this is English fans who knew so much about our own country. Then we added the heritage sites, which we believe must be part of the whole story, from Simangaliso Wetland Park to the Drakensberg heritage site, and then as to Robben Island. And you'll see Richtersveld and Saul Plaikie's home in the Kimberley area, and Northern Cape also featured. So suddenly we're painting a picture of South Africa that this is a seamless experience. This has got no boundaries. The rich history actually integrates South Africa as a holistic experience that every visitor must see. And lastly, we just added the other sites of interest, which normally everyone sells, is Cape Winelands to the Karoo and Southern African Large Telescope. The English fans went through the Karoo and stayed at Mikey's Fontaine, and they refused to leave. They enjoyed it so much at the Lord Milner Hotel. The same with Kimberley, apparently is their favorite place in South Africa, and we know that most South Africans don't even know what Kimberley looks like. So we're selling a story that should sell internally in the country, because our small businesses are there and they are waiting for people to come into their establishments and experience South Africa. And so this is a story that now harnesses 3,500 small businesses that we have registered in the past 2 years across the country. So in the TEP fold, we have now 3,500 registered businesses that we are supporting with skills development, and this is about market access, taking them to market. Let me then talk about the methodology we use through partnerships to support this entire program and go through just a few of them. The types of partnerships that have come up were the ones we were asking for, where there's cost sharing. So with what little funding that TEP has, we always put on the table that from provincial departments of tourism and municipal, if they have the same strategic focus, can we not cost share and do more for more businesses than trying to do it alone? And the answer has been yes, because the municipal and provincial authorities don't have the capacity to go out into the community and to businesses to implement, whereas TEP has that infrastructure. So there's cost-sharing partnerships on a financial basis. There's cost-sharing partnerships, the second one, on non-financial. There's project implementation partnerships, and we found corporate partnerships. So these are the four types of partnerships that small businesses benefit from. If you look on the right-hand side, you will see the first one, cost-sharing, was provincial departments. Western Cape and KZN, provincial authorities, have been in the front line, putting their money down, saying, we'd like to work with small businesses and support them through you, and how can we get more done in our provinces? The third one there is project implementation. So TEP implements a project on their behalf. We find the facilitators, we project manage, and we coordinate the entire program for the municipality. You've got Eastern Cape Tourism Board has joined there. The Shwane Tourism Authority did a SATSA mentorship program for tour operators, and very, very successfully done. So they say we have the will and we have the funds to do part of it, and can TEP come to the party and implement it. The corporate partnerships have been new, and they've been very, very powerful. Standard Bank is one of our biggest partnerships that says, for example, one of them was, can we find restaurants in the Soweto, Alexandra, and Fordsburg areas, because they want to create a restaurant guide for Standard Bank's corporates internally and their visitors. And so they didn't know how to do this. They had to go and find the restaurants. Now TEP has these clients registered. So we were able to come to the party, say we have a database, we know the restaurants, we know the owners, we have been working with them, and we created a restaurant guide by sending a quality assurance agent out that TEP implemented to check the quality gaps of all these restaurants, the skills gaps, and produce a project document for Standard Bank that they've now adopted. And they will then launch this as their restaurant guide in Johannesburg. Based on that, they're saying they would like to do it around the country. So that's a very solid, and they paid for the entire program for TEP to implement this. The TEP Tourism Group is another one that says, can we take a Soweto cluster, for example, of tourism products, and they would like to own it, they will pay for it. How can we package and launch this experience in Soweto with the small businesses in tourism? So this is just by selling them the whole story that I just told you about. City Lodge, I just told you, listened to this presentation and said, okay, we will bring our GMs forward and we will provide the mentorship. Here's some of the partnerships explained in a little more detail. The first one was a 5-day SATSA training program for 30 tour operators, paid for by the City of Tshwane. Training was coordinated by TEP. Then we have a favorite, Limpopo Parks and Tourism Board. I know there's Limpopo featured highly this morning. A very important guest, so bright. Limpopo Parks and Tourism Board satellite offices have agreed to promote TEP. Now, this is very important. We've been advocating this, is that because we can't be everywhere, can the outlying areas use the TEP brochures and application documents and assist in the process of bringing their small businesses to us? And so, as a result of this partnership, TEP's reach in Limpopo now covers 4 district municipalities as well as 22 local municipalities. We're hoping that we can do this in the other provinces as well. City Lodge Group, I said, is 15 SMMEs, not 12. And the CEO is on our board, Clifford Ross. And I guess that's why he understood the program so well. And he said, we will support you on this. And if it goes well in Gauteng, we'd like to roll it around the country. So it's a 6 to 12 month program. And the results will show, are these businesses really benefiting from this? Is it worth it? And he's happy to look at the rest of the country. The SMMEs here, must say, employ some 94 people. And City Lodge, we said to them, if you're doing this, we have approached Empowerdex to issue a certificate for their BEE points. and they didn't even think about it, but they just did it out of goodwill, but they can get some benefit back. Now, this model says we can go to other corporates and do the same and say, for your BE points to support enterprise development, you can work through TEP and invest with us. Eastern Cape Tourism Board, 30 SMMEs mentored. We implemented the program on Eastern Cape Tourism's board's behalf, so they paid for the program. I spoke to you about Western Cape being very strong on this, 64 SMEs. The program was cost-shared between the department and TEP, so perhaps they could have done 32 by working with us. We doubled it to 64. And it's in its third year of operation. So Western Cape has been very strong on mentorship. And that's the kind of leadership focus we think provincial and municipal authorities should think about, is a long-term investment on mentoring rather than a quick win that leaves small businesses stranded. Tourism in Durban is a very big one. We work with all 9 provincial authorities. We contribute 9,000 rands per business to take them to Indaba, 10 of them per province, so that's 90. And they also get additional support from the provincial authorities. They then have marketing materials, they have a stand, they are at Indaba. And again, this program mostly works that you can't appear once and disappear, because that's how the tourism service chain works. To make a sale, they need to be there 2 or 3 times before they can really get into this service chain. And we host an annual SMME workshop at Indaba. We started this as we started the new TEP program. We've ended up with 500 small businesses in the room one day before Indaba opens, 2 years in a row. They're so hungry for the knowledge and the experience that we were able to bring from tour operators to work out how to position their product, how to make sales, and we get experts to address them. And in fact, we use some inspirational material, like showing them video clips on how things really happen. And it's been very successful. And then finally, the Emerging Tourism Entrepreneur Award. We do this jointly with SA Breweries and SA Tourism. This is a full year's program. We have 45 finalists per province. 9 times 5 is 45 for the 9 provinces, out of which only 9 go to Berlin in Germany, a trade show. We pay for this. We make sure they have the experience of being at a hotel, then going out to tour operator programs set up by SA Tourism, and then they appear on the stand and they make sales. The last 2 years, the ATEA finalists were on the stand at ITB Berlin had people in their businesses 10 days later, because we did video clips of their businesses and we had brochures of them. We had them in the room and we had the German tour operators in the room. And we said, meet the new South African emerging tourism entrepreneur. And they were so impressed. In fact, the Galagadi Hotel was one of them. Way out at Galagadi Transfrontier Park. And 10 visitors traveled across the world to go and stay there for at least a week. So it's a very solid program. We then do an awards evening with the minister. The minister is there for the evening, and we announce a winner from the 9, and there are 2 runners-up and an ambassador award. And what's important about it was this award was normally given at World Travel Market in London on the stand of SA Tourism. That was done in total isolation. It was done at a world event, but there were no small businesses there. Now, for the 2 years we have it at Indaba, we have 500 small businesses at a gala dinner with the minister. So you've got 500 small businesses looking up to the winners. So that's an aspirational kind of pull. We want them to say, please apply for your next year ITEA award. And so the registrations have gone up, because on the night the registrations begin. So by just leading by example to show how well these businesses do, the others understand how tough the competition is. And lastly, KwaZulu-Natal Department of Economic Development and Tourism, also very strong, 15 SMMEs in tourism, project managed by TEP in its third year of operation. The 2 biggest areas for tourism in the country seem to be KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape. And those two provincial authorities are very strong on supporting mentorships and partnerships. Sedibeng Municipality is the new one. They want to train tourist guides, which we believe is one of the weaknesses we're pointing out in the country. There are not enough well-trained tourist guides that the Origin Center can train, and we found them, and so we have a partnership to help pay for this and to create the tourist guides. Standard Bank, I've gone through that with 33 restaurants in Soweto, Alex, and Fordsburg. Tebe Tourism Group actually offered their reservation system. We are now loading the tourism clusters on the Tebe reservation system. We've done the first 8, completing it so that they can use the international sales and marketing team to sell our experience. And it will be booked through their online system. And their sales agents will support TEP, and we're taking them out to see the product. The new enterprise development project in Soweto, I mentioned, they said, can we invest through UTEP to run the Soweto cluster and take it to market. So we're currently implementing that project, which is about 20 businesses in Soweto clustered together. FIDASA will provide TEP with discounted membership for 1 year. TEP serves on the FIDASA board, and if they want the benefits of being with FIDASA, they will get this discounted membership for a year. And what is the value of TEP with respect to partnerships? What's happening is that we are seen as an effective and reliable national SME development agency by both public and private sector. It's because we have a strong board, because we also are audited as a non-profit company. We're audited by PricewaterhouseCoopers, we're audited by Kobodo, and we have the Business Trust doing a third audit on the results and the financials of the company. So when a Standard Bank sees that, they're totally reassured of putting their money into a company like that. The national and provincial project implementation infrastructure is in place. We have, in the 9 provinces, selected through a rigorous procurement process, high-quality expert service providers called provincial management offices. So our small businesses go into their offices and get the material, and they're registered by them. We've trained facilitators and quality assurance systems we've put in place, and we're improving on that. We have the organizational and project management skills to deliver in all 9 provinces, and we've shown that we can deal with 3,500 at one go in 1 year. We have a database of verified SMMEs per province, and this is growing. We started from scratch by 2 years ago saying, let's go and inspect every business before we register them, so we know who they are and what they do, and we create a profile on each one. Suddenly, this database is becoming very attractive to lots of other players who have come to TEP and say, can we just have your database? And we say, no, you can invest in this database through a partnership, and because we're spending so much money on this program. And then the partnership extends the reach of TEP in all the provinces through the provincial tourism authorities, which we meet on a regular basis through the departmental forums. And we work jointly with the provinces and the cities. And just lastly, here's the achievements. If you take the cumulative transactions of the turnovers of all these businesses in 1 year, this is what we deliver cumulatively through our support and measuring their performance by saying, what's your turnover and how is it growing? That's 498 million in transactions. 7,500 person years of work if you take the total employees, and 3,700 small businesses registered. What's important is, as part of national priority, more than half of these are HDE businesses. And collectively looking at it, there's 12,000 employees that we're saying we must keep in business. In this recession times, it was more important to keep the businesses running because they would have fallen out of business. And then lastly, 9,000 of those are HDI businesses or employees. So it's 75% of them are HDI. Here's the achievements in SA Host. I couldn't remember all the numbers. We're always dealing with these numbers, but in just SA Host training, which was used during the World Summit and now revamped for the World Cup, 1,351 small businesses went through this training around the country. Toolkits, we did 2,673. That's TEP toolkits. We have 9 toolkits, and we offer it around the country. Business skills, highly intensive program, but 922 SMEs were trained in business skills. Mentorship, I said it's growing. We had a target of 60. We ended up with 109 in this financial year, the last financial year. 8 clusters are operational, and we're building 2 more. And we're dealing with 50 high-flyer clients with growth strategies. Here's a snapshot of high-flyer clients. Percentage increase or decrease in turnover. These 50 clients could provide more than 500 jobs. So they're fairly solid businesses. They've survived over the last 7 years. They've done well. And now we're saying, we need to look at you grow for the next 3 years. 88% of them experienced turnover growth of between 1% and up to 75%. Only 8 clients experienced a decline in the profitability in this last year, with the largest decline being only 0.8%. So the lesson we learned from testing this program is that if the high flyers are given a long-term business focus from finances, resources, and total strategy of how they can expand their business, maybe diversify and question with experts as to whether they're doing the right things, that with that growth strategy in place, the owner suddenly says, can we please have more of this? Because we didn't have time to really look at the growth strategy for our business. I thought I'd end with just sharing with you the last few slides on the actual people we're dealing with. These are some of the restaurants in Fordsburg, Alexandra Township, and Soweto. And these were part of the 33. You can see looking very positive, very strong, making their presence felt, and a Standard Bank being such a strong patron is here to support them. That's the best bridge we can ever build as STEP, is big business with small business, to give them long-term support. This is a beautiful story out of PE, JS Jazz Tavern. We go out to, most of them were having events like this, and she launched her brand. This is a lady that was one of the emerging tourism entrepreneurs, went to ITB Berlin. And she's on the verge of the new Brighton Township. The English fans were taken here one night during the games. They didn't leave till 3 in the morning because they just enjoyed holding quarts of beer in their hands and sitting at a tavern. And she was amazing that they served all the food that was served, they ate South African cuisine and the way we prepared, and they just had a ball, and they written back to us as one of their highlights. She gets busloads of tourists. She is supported by SA Breweries. She is supported by Standard Bank as well. And these are busloads of tourists every week. Turnover is huge. And this is an example of how with big business supporting small business, you can grow these businesses sustainably. And she has a very, very beautiful way with her developing her staff. All youngsters as well. She's a very warm personality, takes care of her staff, and the visitors obviously feel that warmth in her place. And we spent 2 evenings there. This is the story of the District 6 guest house. Auntie Faiza, as we know her, she tells a story to visitors here about how she walked past this heritage site for years, having been evicted from District 6. She went and took 2 other jobs to save enough money, and even then she needed family support. She now is the proud owner of this business. She entertains personalities who bring guests like Desmond Tutu, and cricketing players, youngsters coming from England, actually contribute to her business. What we were able to do is facilitate a marketing grant from the DTI, even though we don't deal with the DTI. Our provincial office was able to secure this grant to help market her business and see the growth and turnover increase. This one is Visit Vakasha in Mpumalanga, an amazing story of one business turning into 3, 2 more guest houses being opened. It's in the mining area. It feeds off that, and turnover changed from 15,000 per month to 56,000 rands per month very recently. So the kind of support that was provided there has shown that the growth will mean employing 3 more people. going from 4 people to 3 more, that's 7. And those are the small wins. It may seem very small to big businesses. So that's close to 100% increase and opening 2 more guest houses. Sorry, 2 guest houses and third one are backpackers. So it's a slight diversification, but it's serving the market. And I wanted to end with that very good story. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Siva Pile, for that presentation. This is the story. You have trained, you have mentored, developed networks, databases, partnerships, 498, resulting in 498 million in accumulative facilitated income, 3720 enterprises, resulting in 12,000 direct jobs, of which 9,000 were HDI. That's the story that you told us in short. Ours is to ask questions of clarification and perhaps look at the data and then respond in whatever way. But let us leave that for after the presentation by the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. That will be the CEO, Ms. Martha Zimarome, that is the CEO of Tourism Business Council of South Africa. But thank you very much once more, Siva. Let us have a 5 minutes comfort break while setting up, while organizing ourselves.
What are the chances of getting this aircon working?
Is
this? So even I can do it.
I can do it.
You can do it.
2 minutes. Okay. Good morning once more. And the next presentation will be by Miss Machaji Marobe, CEO of Tourism. Is it the Elf of Tourism Business Council of South Africa, Tobe? And she'll be giving us the Partnership for Enterprise Entrepreneurship Development in Tourism. Okay, over to you, Ms. Marobe. Thank you.
Good morning. And she went and go for Changane. Loko na vanhu va vulavula Changane lani ya Xoveta. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Chairperson, to for the invitation for the Tourism Business Council of South Africa to join the portfolio committee this morning, to share some thoughts and some ideas and some existing practices in terms of how we can assist from a job creation and alleviation of poverty in our country through the business of travel and tourism. My presentation is going to follow the following. I thought I'll just give the committee a bit of an idea of the areas that I'm going to cover in the presentation. First of all, not wanting to make an assumption, of you knowing who we are, I thought I would start by giving you a bit of an overview of our sector, the way we see it as an industry, and also it will be followed with the structure so that you see where we fit in, as an organization, and also our landscape in terms of the private sector landscape. You'll understand that I sit next to TEP, the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, so that you understand where they fit in and where we fit in as well. And of course, we share a bit of our key milestones with you in terms of when we started as an organization and what are some of the achievements we have, and of course some of our projects that goes directly into contribute to the subject of today's presentation. And then a bit of some of the challenges that we see that faces the sector. And in there comes up the key challenge of entrepreneurship development or enterprise development. So that's essentially the presentation, Chairperson, that I will try and cover this morning. Part of the reason why I'm sharing this overview of our sector is because a lot of us in our industry, it pains us very greatly that we are not a prioritized sector per se within government. We believe that we are at the center of government's problems, not even the South African government alone, but governments all over the world that are concerned about the issues of dealing with job creation and the alleviation of poverty, which is what South Africa faces as a developing nation, with a large majority that is still living below the poverty line. Why do I say that? Because, the kind of the breadth of our sector and the various areas that it touches, there isn't a sector of our economy that is not touched by this industry. Because we believe this industry is one of the world's highest priority industries and an employer, and it is a world's leading growth sector. If you look at all the literature, it is one of the fastest growing economic sectors globally. You have a look at the countries like Brazil. We recently had a president of Brazil who came to South Africa, and in his speech, and in fact in all the speeches that I've ever listened to him speaking, he speaks about travel and tourism. That is the cornerstone of galvanizing his economy in South America. And you can imagine Brazil is one of the biggest, it's actually a large country within South America. And they prioritize tourism as a sector that is going to help the economy to grow and deal with the issues of unemployment and job creation. It is a sector whose business volumes equals or even surpasses oil exports, food products, and all automobiles. A lot of us tend to think that the oil business is quite a huge business because everybody talks about it every day. We as South Africa admire countries like Nigeria, admire the Middle East because of they're rich in oil. But if you look at travel and tourism, which we have in abundance, when you look at our biodiversity, we have the potential to be able to be one of those leading nations on the top of the pyramid, simply because of harnessing that which we have as a region and as a continent of Africa. It is a sector that has become a major player in international commerce. It is a sector that has become a main source of income for many developing countries. I've just mentioned Brazil. If you have a look at India, have a look at, in Africa, look at Kenya. The revival of the Kenyan economy is really been driven by travel and tourism, if you look at your figures. Have a look in West Africa, North Africa, like countries like Morocco, countries like Tunisia. Even great old Libya, rich in oil, they've embraced travel and tourism, and they're putting a lot of resources to develop that sector. In the last 4 years, we have seen travel and tourism economy as GDP increased at an average annual rate of 4% in real terms, that's globally, faster than the overall global economy. And over the same period, our sector has created more than 34 million new jobs across the world. And the latest figures, that you will hear us talking about as a sector, is that if you look at the whole world during this recession, Africa and sub-Saharan Africa has been the only region that has registered growth in travel and tourism, and a growth of between 4 and 5%, whereas the rest of the world has been experiencing recession even within the travel and tourism industry. So as a region, we've shown growth when everybody's declining across the world. And if you look in South Africa, our sector is the only sector that has shown growth. Look at manufacturing. You all know what has been happening with the manufacturing industry. The automobile industry, you know what has been happening. You've seen what has been going in the mining. The jobs have been shed on a daily basis. This is a sector that only registered growth and keeps the taps of the South African economy flowing. So in terms of us, as an organization, and there's a bit a slide earlier, later on that talks about our organization, the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, where do we fit in? I thought I should share this slide with you so you begin to understand from a government point of view where do we fit structurally. At the top level, you see government in all its different sections, and we directly fall within the Tourism Ministry that is created in the new administration. And as an industry, this is where we all sit. You know, we have FEDASA, most of these institutions that you see here, they are members of this organization, the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. SIBA, in his presentation, mentioned some of these institutions. FEDASA, which looks after the hospitality industry, but there is a slide that talks about them later, later on as we go on. So if you see it, this slide here talks about the private sector of the travel and tourism industry. Whereas government, as you know, has got its own structures, it's got its own parastatals like SA Tourism, TEP in a way falls within that space as well, and the Tourism Growing Council and all the other institutions. But this is the other arm of the industry, which is the private sector side of it. Our landscape, the South African travel and tourism industry is made up of a combination of large corporations and SMEs. SIBA talked about a lot of them that very much makes up the sector. These businesses operate in different facets of the industry, which can be broadly divided into transport, land, air, and sea. You know, by land, we talk about you in the road transportation, the tour operators, the travel agencies, the follow to that space, the coach operators, the follow to that space. From air, mostly we talk about the airlines, whether you're international or local airlines. They're very much part of our industry. Sea, we talk about your cruise liners. You know, South Africa, even though our South African cruise line industry is quite small, but we are nevertheless a role player within the African context, at least. In the hospitality industry, where do these businesses exist? Mostly into accommodation sector, food and beverage. You know, all your restaurants, you're talking restaurants, your hotels, your B&Bs, your guest houses, fall into hospitality. And there's a section of our industry called MICE, which really stands for meetings, events, and conferences, and exhibitions. And, you know, that's one huge sector, and we couldn't agree to call it the business tourism nowadays. And then, of course, the tourist attractions, the likes of Robben Island, the Table Mountain, those are some of the sections in which, you know, the sections of our industry as well. These key industry players all play an important role in the delivery of a unique South African experience to local and international tourists. About us as an organization, the TBCSA is the umbrella organization for the private sector in the travel and tourism industry. Our mandate is that of providing a voice for private sector within the industry and to be a conduit for the public sector or civil society. We were formed or established in 1996 to form a unified platform for the private sector to engage with the public sector and other stakeholders to develop and grow the travel and tourism industry. We are managed by a management board with automatic seats for all key tourism associations. There's a slide that lists all of those so that you know who they are. And an elected business representatives, because our membership consists of associations of the different sections of our industry, and we have individual businesses that are also direct membership of the organization. Over the years, the TBCSA has played a pivotal role in tackling macroeconomic issues faced by the sector, which includes, amongst others, issues around transformation in our industry, in travel and tourism. Tourism marketing is very, very essential, because if we're ever going to have a thriving industry, we have to have people arriving. Whether it's South Africans traveling within their own country or regional tourists coming from within other parts of the African continent or international tourists, that's really what drives our industry as well. Issues like skills development, which is very essential, that we have the manpower to be able to look after our businesses and deliver that unique South African experience, and issues around quality assurance. And this is where the Tourism Grading Council comes into the picture. The TBC membership is made up of fee-paying members from key travel and tourism sectoral associations and leading businesses. The key sectoral associations are all members of the TBCSA and form the backbone of the management board that I mentioned earlier on. Individual leading businesses have the option of joining directly to the TBCSA, or they also become a member through their own sectoral associations. Our members also come from non-tourism businesses operating within the sector, such as research agencies and financial institutions. And, of course, our membership support also comes from corporates operating outside the sector, as they recognize the value of tourism, the economy of South Africa. And we call them the crown members. These are those corporate members that I'm talking about. If you look at them, the likes of Coca-Cola, F&B, and South African breweries, these are institutions that, if you look at F&B, for instance, you know, the alcohol, which is the main, their main business, it's consumed in our hotels, in restaurants, in the taverns, and tourist attractions across our entire, you know, sector. We actually are one of the biggest, actually their biggest customer. If you look at F&B from a financial institution's point of view, and if people want to go and raise funding to be able to get into business, they look to the likes of F&B, to Absa, the likes of Nedbank. But at the moment, we wish that F&B is in the forefront of financing and helping small businesses within the travel and tourism industry, and we're helping them to be able to understand our sector much better. And again, the same thing can be said about Coca-Cola. The largest customer is hotels, restaurants, airlines, coaches, you name them, and which is really the engine of our industry. These are the association members that I was mentioning. Let me just take them individually, Chairperson, with your permission. There is a section of our industry that I talked about, the MICE industry or business tourism industry. These are the people that you will call on if you want to organize a conference, you want to organize an exhibition, you want to organize a meeting, and the association there that organizes the individual members or the individual businesses in that area is called the Southern African Association for the Conference Industry, SAACI for short. And so any major conference you can think of, you will find members of this association very active in that space. Your B&Bs, your guest houses and guest lodges, they're all united, their voices united under the National Accommodation Association. And of course, the African Handel Institute, they have a tourism arm that looks after the businesses, you know, within that big membership of the AHI. South African Leisure Tourism and Hospitality Association is an arm of NAFCOC that is also organizing SMEs within the NAFCOC fraternity. Of course, the AA, which is, has a travel and tourism section of it, got a lot of members that falls under the AA. They're also in the business of promoting travel, especially domestic travel. And the key thing with them is that they also have international links, which is very good for us, especially from emerging businesses because of some of the partnerships that they can bring on board. We have Saboa, which within it, they have an association called COASA, which is the Coach Operators Association of South Africa. This is where your Springbok Atlases are. This is where your Mega Coach, Mega Bus, they're all in that space. This is they're different from your commuter transport, your normal Patco buses or your, here in Cape Town, the commuter transport. This is where this is specific to tourist buses, and they have their own specific association within the South African Bus Operators Association. Savrala is an association that organizes the vehicle rental and leasing. Your Avis, your Budget, your HECS, they fall under this association. FedAlpha is the one that organizes the hospitality sector, your hotels, your accommodation of a larger scale. They get a house under FedAlpha. And then, of course, we have SciTech, which looks after the youth travel, which is a very huge component within a developing nation like ours, and the backpackers. You know, Siva mentioned some of the SMEs that are involved, that they have in their books. A lot of them comes from the backpacking industry. This is a sector that has done very well, especially now during the recession, when a lot of people are doing what is called trading down. Because they don't have money in their pockets, they're now buying lesser. And the backpackers industry has been they've benefited from those trading down incidences. ASATA is the Association of the Travel Agencies. The individual travel agencies will belong to this association. We have the home for the South African, the tour operators, which is called Southern African Tourism Services Association. The tour operators, so that you understand who these people are, these are the people who, it's almost like your metro. If you can imagine your wholesalers, these are the people that will go out and package a destination. And once they package it, they will go in and sell the package that they've put together to a travel agency who will end up selling it to you. So they have a home of their own, the association, which is called SASA. And then VOASA, it's the association for your vacation ownerships, timeshare institutions. It used to be called the Timeshare Institute of South Africa. It's now changed to be VOASA, which looks after vacation ownership, looks after timeshare. They also look after fractional ownerships, you know, so that there's some standards in that space. What do they all these associations have in common is that you begin to provide some element of professionalism into each one of the sectors. You also become a center of knowledge, especially for emerging entrepreneurs that are getting into our industry as well. What are the key milestones of the TBCSA? Of course, there's membership and all the businesses associations that we have had. I've listed there. Is that in the last more than 10 years, one of the difficulties that we used to have in this country that was affecting us as an industry was that we were getting less people traveling into South Africa. I don't know how many people can remember at the time when we went for elections in this country, South Africa was getting less than 1 million people visiting our country. We're talking international tourists. Even from the regional, your regional destinations, the likes of Angola, Zimbabwe, Zambia, we're getting less than those a million of those tourists. We're sitting today as a country receiving between up to the figures that are going at the moment is 9.5 million people that are arriving into the shores of South Africa. And we like to believe that as a private sector, we've made a contribution to that through a project that we started back in 1999 called TOMSA. And there's a slide that talks about TOMSA to yourselves, specifically Chairperson, because it is a fund and a project that is under threat from some of the plans that provinces have to put together a tourism levy, you know, which will take away this facility. It's called the Tourism Marketing Levy for South Africa, which is a fund that you know, has been for years adding close to 10% to 12% into the South African tourism organization's budget over the years. But there's a slide that talks about that later on. Some of the milestones going on with this presentation is we were party as a TBCSA, as a private sector, with government to put together Tourism BEE Scorecard, which has resulted in an organization called TEXA, the Tourism Empowerment Council of South Africa, and to ensure that the transformation agenda is driven within our sector. And, of course, the establishment of institutions like the Tourism Enterprise Program. This is what they were called before, but they're now called the Tourism Enterprise Partnerships. The Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, that looks after quality assurance within South Africa. Of course, the Tourism and Empowerment Council that I've mentioned on. And internationally, we strengthen relationships within Southern Africa through an organization called RETOSA, which is the Regional Tourism Organization of Southern Africa, because the knowledge that South Africa has is important that is shared within the region, because we succeed as a region, not as a country alone. And then, of course, the UNWTO, which at the United Nations level, we also very much into that space, putting the Africa agenda on the international scene. And, of course, the establishment of the new Department of Tourism is sort of partly to some of the push that came from the private sector. These are some of the projects that, you know, the key projects of our organization that we do in partnership a lot with government. Every year, since 2007, we have started a conference which looks after investment and investment promotion into South Africa, specifically sub-Saharan African hospitality industry. It's got a very simple agenda. Three objectives of this conference is to promote knowledge sharing within and amongst the role players within South Africa, especially, and I mentioned this to this forum this morning, that one of the reasons why a lot of SMEs, a lot of emerging role players don't enter the travel and tourism industry because they don't have the knowledge. They don't have the network. They don't even know the people that are in this sector. And one of those, as an intervention, as an organization, we put together this conference that we host every year, where we bring role players who are active in the South African, the sub-Saharan Africa hospitality industry, and globally, to begin to share those knowledge. You know, we have the likes of the Southern Sun, top leadership of Southern Sun, Sun International. On an international level, the leadership of the groups like the Hilton Hotels, groups like the Intercontinental Hotel Group, coming on and taking part into a conference and being placed in a position where they can be asked questions by emerging entrepreneurs who may be struggling to get involved in a hotel industry or in a tour operating industry. By having those leaders sitting in front of them, they're able to pick up some of the knowledge to be able to make it easier for them to get into business. So we see that as our contribution to begin to broaden the knowledge base, not only for South Africa, but for sub-Saharan Africa, because if Africa succeeds, South Africa succeeds as well. And of course, TOMSA, there's a specific slide that talks about that. We also get involved under skills development. We've started a project 2 years ago of spreading the knowledge and education or the culture of tourism at school level. There we're looking at your finishing graduates, we're looking at unemployed graduates who have studied tourism, and they are sitting at home, they don't know how to go about looking for a job within the industry. More so, why do we do that? Because we know that as an industry, we don't have a very good profile, especially among school going and the learners, because the people see us as with menial jobs. You know, young people don't see men in a reception at a hotel being an exciting job. So ours is to go out and explain the career path that one can follow by going to the hospitality industry. And what we do there as a TBC is we bring the knowledge of our members. We bring those leaders that I've mentioned earlier on to be able to speak to the youth and tell them about themselves and how they're starting their careers into the industry. More so, where are they in the industry? What is it that keeps them in the industry? And we've seen that in the last 2 years, that there's a lot of more people, more young people that are beginning to appreciate that this is an industry just like any other, and the prospect of them eventually being their own employers at the end are much higher when they get into the sector than if they have to go to any other sector per se. Because one of the things that we pride ourselves in as an industry is that this is an industry that has a much higher possibility of you becoming your own employer than any other sector. If you stuck in there and you learn the ropes from some of the leaders, whether it's in the hotel industry or the travel agency industry or the tour operator industry. TOMSA, a little bit about that, Chairperson. It is a Section 21 entity that the TBCSA established back in 1998 with a simple objective of raising additional funds to market the county South Africa. And when this project was started, it was simply because South African tourism, I still recall, and Siva used to be involved in TBCSA that, South African tourism, then it was called the SATUR. It used to receive something like 52 million rand to be able to market South Africa internationally. And at that point, it affected the low budget that this organization had. It affected the private sector so much because a lot of our members found themselves having to put a whole lot more money into marketing internationally. And hence, we were not receiving the kind of numbers of tourists that we were supposed to get at the destination. And so we started this fund. And essentially what TOMSA is, it's a levy that people sign up, the product role players within the travel and tourism industry, sign up to collect a 1% levy for every guest who stays in the hotel, who buys the tour package, or who hires a car. They will add 1% onto the bill of the tourist. And that is the fund that we collect as the TBCSA, and we contribute that to South African tourism every year. Just to mention, Chairperson, we started with this fund back in 1999. We collected 11.4 million with 50 levy collectors at that point. Today, I can tell you that comfortably that last year, the TBCSA, through TOMSA, we gave an additional 103 million rand to South African tourism to add up to the marketing of South Africa. And it's one of the proudest moments for us as an organization, as an industry, because this is something that is not done anywhere else in the world. You know, if there are any tourism levies or bed levies that are being collected in other parts of the world, it goes into the government coffers, and it goes in the exchequer, and it gets distributed evenly across, you know, how government distributes funds. But this is a fund which is collected by the private sector. We pass on directly to a government institution that uses it to promote the destination of South Africa. No one does something like that in the world. And it worries us, and I'm sharing this with you this morning, because there is a threat to this fund, because a lot of provinces are wanting to put together, introduce what is called a bed levy, or tourism levies. And once they put that in place, which is going to become mandatory to everybody, the sad thing is that that fund is not going to come back into tourism. So we are not going to find a South African tourism who would probably get a 700 million budget from government. That budget is not going to become 800 million anymore, because they won't be having this fund anymore coming from the public. This is how the TOMSA levies are. The bulk of the collection comes from the hotels, as you can see, and then the other portion is from the car hire industry, and then, of course, the accommodation sector split with your game lodges, your guest houses, all contributing a huge proportion to that fund. In terms of geographic spread, the bulk of those, understanding also that most of the facilities are in Gauteng, you know, got over 60% of the collection of the fund coming out of from Gauteng as a province. What are the challenges, Chairperson, that we as a private sector see that is affecting our industry? The big one, and these challenges, I'm raising them here because they go to the core of what are the barriers for SME and entrepreneurship development in our country. As long as we don't have airlift and air access, improve airlift and air access into our country, we're talking about less numbers of tourists arriving into our country and less tourists to be shared amongst anybody else who may have aspiration to enter into our industry. So we see that as a major challenge that needs to be addressed in Destination South Africa. Skills development, Stephen raised it as well, and you know, we the private sector is making a contribution in terms of how we can begin to deal with this issue. Concerns around safety and security of our tourists and our people. Local government, the role of local government, why is that important? As long as service delivery becomes a problem, it's problematic at a local level, it affects businesses directly. And SMEs suffer a lot. Big businesses have the networks and the channels and the power to be able to influence higher authority, to be able to address whatever challenges they may be having. But if you're a small business and you're sitting at a locality and you're trying to collect water into your guest houses, it's a major problem. And a lot of them are struggling with those kind of challenges at that local level. Service excellence, Stephen mentioned that as well. Infrastructure support is a major issue, again, affecting SMEs. Roads, the signage, a lot of the B&Bs and tour operators who are in business, they struggle to get signage to show to tourists where their B&Bs are located. And those things need to be blocked off, again, because they need to be addressed if the work that TEP is doing is going to go anywhere. Because they can do all their systems they can do. We as a private sector can come in with all the mentorship and the matchmaking services, but if people, the tourists, cannot find that establishment because there's no signage, the road infrastructure going to that lodge is not visible, is not there, the tourists will never go there. Issues around responsible tourism, the need to protect our biodiversity as a destination, because after all, that is the one thing that brings people to South Africa. That's a unique advantage that we have as a destination. Brazil has got its own unique advantages, so is Kenya, so is Morocco. Biodiversity and protection is one of the things that is very key for South Africa as well. Land claims is a big issue as well. A lot of the SMEs, and I think SIBA, some of the people that you have as your enterprise that are coming to your program, have got into owning products because they've been given back land and that has properties in it that they now find themselves having to run. Now, if those issues around land claims are not addressed, a lot of those people are struggling to make headway in terms of their business. And if they can be assisted again with by business, private sector can help, they can get funding everywhere else. But issues like land claims, if are still hanging over their head, no progress is going to be made. And no tourist will ever want to go to a place that has got a legal case hanging over their head. And no investment is going to go into that space. The other challenge that we see is around transformation and entrepreneurship development, and there's some slides that I'll talk about later on. And the big one for us is the prioritization of tourism within government and cabinet. We believe that this government needs to put tourism at the top of the agenda. And we're not saying that because we are in it, because we love it, we live it. We honestly believe, and studies can be presented time and time again, it is the one sector that other countries in the world have identified it to help them to deal with issues of unemployment, especially the strategy around rural economic development. Tourism is really very much at the center of that. And we get concerned that we don't believe that it's getting vital, it's not high up in the agenda. When the president looks at his list, we would love to see travel and tourism sitting in the top of that list. And then, of course, the other challenges, I talked about it later on. Now, from an entrepreneurship point of view, I'm not going to go very much into that because Siva has really covered a lot of that. But essentially, the next slide is going to talk about what have we done as a private sector in terms of assisting government. And I'm going to spend less because throughout the presentation that Siva has mentioned, my members feature very, very strongly in there to show that private sector is joining hands with the government to try and make sure that we bring your historical and disadvantaged people into the mainstream of travel and tourism. And doing everything in our power even is to share the knowledge that we have. And I've highlighted some of the projects that we get involved in. But essentially our involvement in assisting SMEs and especially HD goes back to back in 1996 with the National Tourism Strategy that had signaled that SME development as something that we needed to embrace as a sector. Part of that strategy came out, the Emerging Tourism Entrepreneur of the Year, which was the initiative of both the private sector and the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism then. And some of the entrepreneurs that are on the database of the Tourism Enterprise Partnership goes back all the way to the days when Italia started. And the private sector involvement in terms of the ITER is really very much around knowledge sharing and the coordination of the program and making sure that it receives the attention and the support. And once these people have been embraced, you become the winners of the program. What do we have in place? It's the ITER program that TEP has been talking about. And some of the private sector members that are in there who are making the ITER program still exists today. It started back in 2001. The one of the latest partners in the program is SA Brewers. SA Brewers have a program called Kickstart, which has included an element of travel and tourism in it. And the focus area with the Kickstart program and when they joined forces with the travel and tourism industry, there's a focus around assisting taverners to graduate into becoming formalized businesses. Because once they become formalized businesses, you then begin to see the likes of some of the successful stories that the TEP has been able to share with you. It's through the work of entities like SA Brewers. And if you ask yourself, you then say to yourself, what's the need for them? They had a big conglomerate. You know, why did they have to worry about small business issues that really has to do with travel and tourism? Because as I said earlier on, we are the backbone of what really drives their business. And that's why they keep putting investment into our industry. And further than that, our involvement chairperson has been really around matchmaking and mentorship programs. And in the TEP presentation, a mention was made of some of the programs that SASA, which is one of the associations I mentioned earlier on, that have been involved in assisting tour operators in particular, those who've gone into the industry and they wanted to go to the next level to become professional so that they can begin to deal with the international market. There's a program that has been put together for mentorships around matchmaking, which they're doing together with the TEP and with ASATA as well. And one of the difficulties that a lot of travel agencies, when they have to enter into the travel agency business per se, they have to contend with some rigorous rules of institutions like IATA, which is the International Aviation Organization. They stipulate, if you have to become a travel agency, what are some of the provisions you must make for your clients before you can say you are selling a ticket for any airline. And a lot of the rules, they really require a lot of money. For instance, if you want to, up until today, if you wanted to become a travel agency, you need to be able to part with something like $500,000, which is a guarantee that says if you start issuing an SAA ticket or British Airways ticket or a Virgin Atlantic ticket, that airline is guaranteed that you will be able to deliver the tourists into that airline. But most importantly, if anything happens to that tourist, they will be covered from an insurance point of view. Up until now, that has been a big hindrance. So the initiative that SATA has been involved in, with our support, is to come up with a scheme that is going to be kinder to emerging businesses that have been falling on the wayside over the years because of this rigorous processes that they needed to adhere with. So this is one of those the contributions that we are making to unlock the doors that new players can come into the marketplace as well. I mentioned about the work that the Southern African Tour Operating Association is doing. They run a speed marketing session where you do a kind of a matchmaking service where your emerging tour operator that comes into the industry, they meet or they get to listen to the likes of Thompson's Travel. These are some of the big tour operators in this country. Tour Vest, Welcome Tours, Thompson's, Terror Tourism Group. And in that association, it's about knowledge sharing. But those, the SMEs as well are allowed, given the opportunity to almost like showcase their product offerings. And in doing that, within the comfort of not being exposed to the international clients, and in that session, you are then allowed to be, the experienced operators are able to correct the SMEs, to tell them, this is not the do's, this is how you do it, this is not how you do it. And over the years, you're finding that a lot of them are graduating, and they are beginning to have the confidence to appear at shows like Indaba, to appear at shows at like the World Travel Market in London, the ITB, and other shows that are taking place all over the world. And then other success factors that I can mention, in addition to what Siva mentioned, is Southern Sun has a program called Adopt a Guest House. They have close to 10, 15 guest houses in Soweto that through this program, they've been able to export to them how to package their guest houses and how to present it to guests. And so one of the benefits, besides the knowledge sharing and improving their standards, is that when Southern Sun hotels are full, they offload their tourists into some of those guest houses and so on. And in that way, there is a knowledge benefit, but also there's a knowledge, there's a business, a direct benefit into the businesses. And in that way, these ladies in Soweto, they have learned, and they're in a class of their own nowadays, which is quite pleasing. What are some of the challenges that we see as that really stand in the way of success and in terms of entrepreneurship development, especially at least from us as a private sector, is that there isn't a comprehensive national strategy on entrepreneurship development, you know, in this country. And we look forward, and I mentioned this into the opportunities, that the new tourism sector strategy, which the minister is busy rolling out right now, is going to be able to address that thing. Because that once we have a strategy like that, it can begin to articulate what the vision is that we're trying to achieve as a country. And then most importantly, it begins to start articulating what is it that we can do in the private sector and what is it that government needs to be able to do. And of course, we can begin to monitor our successes. And we see if any of those programs that we're putting in place are delivering the goods and the results that we're looking for. And of course, in the strategy, we're also looking forward to a beneficiation. We want to see more entrepreneurs benefiting from government programs. Because let's face it, government is the biggest buyer of travel and tourism services in this country and products. And we see it as one way of making sure we fast track some of these operators, because they're getting frustrated. A lot of them put a lot of money into their businesses, but they don't see the investment returning anything for them. And we would like to see government coming board to be able to make that happen. Access to finance is a very big issue, and one of the suggestions that we've been discussing it, that there need to be a tourism bank, something like what they have in Rwanda. In Rwanda, they have a fund called Grofin, which assists businesses, emerging businesses, especially from your historically disadvantaged communities, to assist to get into the various sectors of the economy in Rwanda. And we think in the travel and tourism, we need something like that. Because your traditional banks and your traditional institutions that are there, the NEF and all these institutions that are in place, they don't understand our industry as a sector. They want you to return. If they give you $1 million today, they want this return within 2 years. But the business of travel and tourism, it's a long-haul investment. You invest today, you may begin to make some returns in 5 years down the line, especially if you build a hotel. You build a hotel today, you're looking at 10 years, 15 years to begin to see some money or even to break even over there. And a lot of people don't understand that. One big thing that we see very, very serious, Chairperson, is that until there's a comprehensive tourism awareness, tourism education, a culture of travel and tourism in this country, we can forget about sustained entrepreneurship in our country. Because this is a sector that you need to understand before you get into it. If you're going to get into it because you just picked up that here is Bernard Marobe or Matechi Marobe or Siva Pele, who's now running a successful business down the line, which is in travel and tourism, I can also hop into this bus and, you know, I'm going to succeed. You are not going to succeed if you don't understand that this is a 24/7 business. A lot of emerging businesses in our country are failing because they don't understand how this industry operates. This industry is a formalized business. It's just something where you close shop, you say, I'm working from 9 to 5, and come 5 o'clock, I'm going to close my shop, I'm going home. A lot of people are falling by the wayside because they don't understand. Tourists will knock at the door at any time of the day. You need to be ready to be able to deliver that. So, and we can only get through that if there's a comprehensive tourism awareness, tourism education, and tourism culture ingrained in our people. So that out of that comes your students who understand this is a sector they can pursue their career in. Out of that comes entrepreneurs who understand that they can develop businesses and they can make some returns, not immediately, but over the years. The role of cities, Chairperson, is very, very important. And we see it as a challenge because if the cities don't understand our sector again, the issue of skills development will always be a big issue. We believe that there's a need for simplification of government regulation and taxation, almost like a taxation regime that is very friendly to tourism. Let me explain to you why this is a problem. we're busy at the moment, collaborating to come out with a study to really explain to government how heavily taxed our industry is. For instance, if you are a travel agency, for you to be able to sell a ticket for that tourist, for that traveler to be able to fly out into from any other airport, that person has to pay an airport tax. They have to pay some VAT into that ticket that they pay. There's like four or five taxes that the government gets at the travel and tourism industry. You know, on top of that, if you are in the transport business, if you are a tour operator or a coach operator, you know, besides the fact that you get taxed up, you know, in terms of you having to license your vehicle, a special permits that you need to be able to get to be able to operate. We have new regulations coming up now with the new carbon tax that's going to come up. We have the new the toll gates that are coming up in Gauteng. And if you look at it, all these things are making it very difficult for people to make ends meet and break even once they get into this industry. And it's things that they don't know before they get into it. Once they get into it, that's why the margin becomes low. And they, over time, they just take their bags and think, you know what, this is not a business I want to be into. I collect so much money, but out of it, I get just a little bit of it. And we believe that at some point we need to have a comprehensive review of the taxation regime that really directly affects travel and tourism if we are ever going to assist this industry to really grow forward, especially when we look at it from a community empowerment point of view. A lot of communities have got into land that was taken from them historically. In some of those land, properties and establishments have been established. Those communities, when they get into those facilities, they are facing problems to help them succeed and make those businesses that used to thrive before are not in place. And so a lot of those facilities are falling into disrepair because there's no assistance program to assist them to continue to be in business after that. What then are the opportunities? I mentioned that the new sector strategy, we're working with government, the new tourism department, to focus specifically around tourism education and awareness, because we believe that is the foundation for our sector to grow. And, of course, integrated national, provincial, and local government programs is very, very key for travel and tourism to grow. The opportunities around matchmaking and mentorship programs. A lot of our leaders in our industry are retiring, and a lot of them are staying in the country, and they want them to give back. And TEP has got a lot of them in their books who are willing to be able to assist the emerging entrepreneurs. Marketing channels that are there, like in Daba. One of the things we're discussing with the Department of Tourism right now and is that when it comes to Daba, we, for years, the department and the province and with the Tourism Enterprise Partnership have been taking SMEs into Daba to introduce them to the marketplace so that they begin to understand how business is done and they're able to see. But one of the things we've been discussing with the province is that we need to continue to do that, but we need to have it with a different formula. Because what's been happening over the years is that the SMEs arrive at Indaba. A lot of them find it very difficult. They go to Indaba for the four days that they're at Indaba. They don't do any business. And a lot of them get disillusioned. And why don't they do business when they get to Indaba? Indaba is a platform where the people that they, SMEs, may want to network with when they get to Indaba, they don't have time for them when they get to Indaba. Because they themselves, when they are there, they have specific buyers, specific products that they want to meet with. So, for instance, let's take for example, I go to Indaba, my province takes me to Indaba, and I'm targeting to meet, let's say, the CEO of Thompson's Travel. The reality of it is that the CEO of Thompson's Travel at Indaba doesn't have time for me, because when they're at Indaba, they are there to meet their international buyer, their partner. And so you're finding a lot of the SMEs going to Indaba, they languish around, and they go back home, they have nothing to show in terms of their time being at Indaba. And not because they're not innovative, but simply the opportunity was not there. So one of the things we met the other day with the Department of Tourism, that as a private sector, we want to discuss a different model of how we can work with the TEP, the department, and the provinces to make sure that when the SMEs go to Indaba, they do benefit out of Indaba and over the long term. And so it goes with all the other opportunities that are coming up. And of course, I mentioned the issue about the tourism bank earlier on. In conclusion, Chair President, I thought I should end up by just mentioning a few things that we think are the requirements for entrepreneurship development in tourism, from our own perspective. We believe there's a couple of things that are a must for travel and tourism to go forward and travel and tourism to grow. Because if you have a sector that is growing, you're also going to have opportunities that are abundant. Because if the cake is not growing, you will have nothing to share with anybody. And here are the following. We believe that there need to be a prioritization of the sector at the highest level of government. A presidential focus is what we think is very important. Secondly, that there has to be a visible support for the National Department of Tourism through appropriate resource allocation for them to be able to finance institutions like the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, because it's a partnership with the business class. There has to be that equitable resource sharing to be able to advance the work that they're doing, because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of resources. They need people and manpower to be out there in the provinces, to be in those rural settings, to reach out to those SMEs, that if no one reaches out and knocks at their doors, that no one will ever see them. South African tourism requires a budget. Let me just give you this example, that you have a South African tourism organization that is expected to compete with the likes of Australia with an annual budget allocation of 700 million rands versus an Australian budget for marketing alone of 1 billion Australian dollars. Now, how do we even stand the chance to compete? We want to compete for tourists to arrive in South Africa versus going to Australia, but we have 700 million, they've got one Australian dollars. We cannot even compete. And that's when we talk about resource allocation, we talk about things like that. We believe that the third must is a comprehensive strategy, implementation plan, and resources by government to be able to implement that entrepreneurship development strategy that can be implemented by both private sector and the government. That, again, tourism awareness, education, the culture of tourism had to be embedded in the society if we are ever going to beat the likes of Brazil, the likes of Kenya, the likes of Morocco, and good old Mauritius, which is a small island, but it beats us in terms of tourist arrivals. And lastly, issues around provincial and local government readiness. We talk here infrastructure support, and we also talk about human resource support and facilitation. Chairperson, I thought, I'm not going to dwell much in terms of the partnerships that are in place, because I think TEP presentation did justice to that. Throughout TEP's presentation, my members are featuring very, very strongly. And Chairperson, I hope from there you can see that the private sector is not standing by, contrary to popular belief. We are everywhere in terms of assisting. We go in terms of in terms of funding, where we join funding with government. We're sharing knowledge, which we know is only with knowledge that we know that our people will be able to embrace this sector. They will run their businesses successfully. Because this is an industry that you need to understand how it operates. Because if you don't know how it operates, you are not going to deliver a lasting experience to the tourists, and you definitely not come back to your establishment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for a very informative input, Ms. Marobe. In fact, the issue of prioritizing tourism, I think we've taken the first step of making the tourism a fully fledged government department. I think let us take that as a first step. The second step, I think we need much more communication in tourism, government, provinces, municipalities, private enterprises, to communicate our way forward, so as to adopt a strategy that is going to be supported and draw synergies from all sectors and from all role players. You have said that we've got to have a comprehensive national strategy, and we agree on entrepreneurship development, access to financial resources. Let me tell you a short story. There is a lady who is running a backpacker in Durban. Her name is Saloshna Mudli. We have made a package for her through the trade and partnership in KwaZulu-Natal. They said that she is going to qualify. She has gone to Italab Bank, she has spent about 6 months negotiating with Italia Bank, and that was before the World Cup. Up to now, she has not got a cent from Italia Bank, even after packaging this thing, a proposal, the way they say it should have been. And it's all because, in fact, the amount of money that she requires is less than the value of her assets. And the issue of simplification of government regulations is going to be an ongoing business, and then I think it is going to assist us as different political parties when we discuss our approach to tourism, to see what proposals we can make. But I think what is important here and what we all realize here is that there should be ongoing interaction. The role of CETAs and in as far as skills development is concerned, this is an area that has been raised in a number of quarters. And the Mr. Durant, that is the liaison officer for the minister, is aware of that, and then he has communicated that to the minister with regard to a specific case. But I think we also need to try and see how best we can interact and to improve that. But one of the things as well, I think your institution should set up a meeting with the management of CETAs and discuss what to expect and what should happen. Because what happens, we don't talk. We don't set up meetings and say, this is the problem we're having. We want to have a meeting with you as a CETA. These are the things that we believe you should do in order to promote the industry you should be promoting optimally. The issue of the Indaba, the small business and so forth, I think it is, we've all experienced that one when we went to Indaba. And then the issue of visibility, we wanted to have also a seminar and at a parliamentary level, but it's getting delayed, but we wanted to have it during the month of September, that is the tourism month, to lift the profile of the industry in the country as an economic player who is a growing an economic player. The issue of public partnerships and community partnerships, we've been to two provinces that are least advantaged, that is the Northern Cape and Limpopo, to interact, and then there is some information, but we'll have to go on with our Indaba, because we're going to have an ongoing Indaba, and then whenever each partner needs the other, I think the other partner should be a phone call away. And then the issue of infrastructure and facilitation, like going to Limpopo, what is the Rain Queen? Where is the Rain Queen? No, the Mujaji. We've been there. The access road is terrible. The lodge that was supposed to be built is half done, and no one can explain where the funds are right now. But they said that they'll be rectifying that within a month's time. We don't know whether that is going to happen. This Limpopo development. And this fragmentation of approach in as far as tourism is concerned. Municipal level is not aligned to the province is not aligned to the national, and then the national, the government does not talk to the private sector, but the private sector is the main actor. So it's all these things, and I think with time, we are going to try and improve it a step more, but I'm sure that now that the ministry is represented more is likely to happen. Having said that, let us then go to the questions. Machiba said, and Kumba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. At least for the first time hearing that there's a private company, sort of like, regarding the second presenter. You somehow responded to our, I can't say baby cry, because we're talking about those previously disadvantaged people who cannot even, you know, raise their legs. Who can do whatever they can do because those who have were enjoying the wealth of this country as the other were ever. So it was an eye-opener, as I can say it, because I'm a rural girl. I know what actually is happening down there. At least you have sent me a message. You can tell them that you are there. So as far as the first presenter is concerned, I still have a question. Like she touched it a little bit, the friction between the traditional leaders as far as land restitution or land redistribution with the municipalities, that whenever a person is about to do whatever, more as well, like I said, I'm a rural girl, there that friction of development. If a person wants to establish something, small and a business, the municipalities are not even aware. The traditional leaders on the other side, they claim to have land. The municipality also said the same story. So the people are really struggling down there. So I don't know whether that it can be solved by the department. And the other thing is that when we look at the issue of, as far as the first presenter is concerned, your board, I'm over gender sensitive. It's not that I'm talking it now because it's Women's Month. We have about 10 men, which is a rugby team, I believe, and only 3 women. Why? In your board.
Thanks, Chair. I've also got some questions from the Honourable Shin, who had to leave to go to other portfolios. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So if I can start with the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, I've got 2 questions there. During the World Cup, I interviewed nearly 100 tourists that came out. And I asked them what they had enjoyed the most about being in South Africa. And what came through very, very strongly, almost 100%, was that they enjoyed the traditional part of our tourism experience, things that we are known for and that we're trying to move away from. So people were saying they really enjoyed going to the Kruger Park, seeing the Big Five, going on game drives, safari drives. They liked going up Table Mountain, they loved the wine route, all the type of things that actually we know tourists have traditionally enjoyed in this country, but where in this committee certainly and in the presentation we are now trying to expand. And so my first question is the mix of tourism experiences that you spoke at some length about, to do the stuff that is less traditional, more rural, heritage-based, that type of thing. To what extent are you finding that to be, in a sense, counter-cyclical, not really what the market wants, and a bit of an uphill struggle? I just want to give an idea of how easy that's going. Then my second question on TEP is this. I think it's one thing to actually present a picture which talks about what's being created. The difficulty you have with the presentation is that the Tourism Enterprise Project is not like any other program in the sense that you're not expecting to get a return. If one had to actually appropriate money from the national budget for defense or health or education, one doesn't say compared to what, because that is the only service provider, it's the government, and you're not trying to make a profit on your defense industry. So if one is actually generating 500 million rands extra of income because of these partnerships, what is that compared to? I mean, would we have done better had we not taken that money at all and kept it in the hands of taxpayers to fund the whole thing? So what did that cost to actually produce the 498 million extra rand of revenue and the 12,000 jobs we spoke about? And really what I'm trying to ask you was, is it actually worth it? I mean, I don't know the answer. I mean, what we've heard is that it is, and certainly what we saw is very uplifting and clearly very beneficial to the people who participated. But are you getting value for money? I just like a feeling on that. And then the Honourable Shin's questions, Chairperson. On the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, she would like to know, what are the criteria for accepting SMEs into the program? Then secondly, what is the failure rate for those enterprises that are incorporated? And if there is a failure, do TEP then walk away at that point? Her third question was, what is the financial contribution of the SMEs to that program? What is their input into it? And her last question on the TEP was, in terms of the financing, what is the share that's taken up between the government and the business trust? How does that split the actual funding of the TEP? And then she had a couple of questions on TVCSA, and she'd like a bit of explanation on the challenges that were mentioned. For example, the tax issue. How far have we progressed with the talks with the government? What is the status on that one? The airlift and air access, particularly the airlift, what is some detail on that particular aspect? And then the point you made about the tourism going up from 1994 from 1 million to 10 million, it is a statistic and a success story that's quoted fairly often, but rests on a foundation of a definition. In other words, we say if someone spends at least one bed night in this country, then they're defined as a tourist. We know that 75% of that 10 million, in other words, 7.5 million people, are coming from the neighboring states, and it's hard to sustain an argument that they really are tourists when we all know that they're actually here for economic reasons to shop and buy essential products which they can't get in their own country. So they have to stay overnight. But is it fair to call them a tourist? I mean, that's a debate that's been going on for a long time, and Honorable Shin would like to have your view on the credibility of that. Growth from 1 million to 10 million, is it really what it appears to be? And then her last two questions on the same challenges are, how will the tourism bank that was proposed be financed? Will that come from the taxpayer? And then lastly, the skills challenge that you identified, can you give us a little bit more detail on the role of CETA and CETA in that? And I just have one question for the TVCSA guys as well, Chairperson, and that is this whole issue of the Thompson levy. I always worry when there is a tax that's collected to support a government department, because human nature tells me that if the Department of Tourism are going to get 105 million rand from you, surely in the back of their minds they're going to cut their budget by 105 million rand because they know it's coming from you. And does it actually really add on, or is it not sort of assumed to a certain extent, and is it not part of the budgeting of the department to know they're going to get that money and therefore to cut back on what they would have given SA Tourism anyway? And, I mean, I take your point about competing against Australia. I understood that Australia was spending double us. It's like 1.5 billion rand, not 1 billion Australian dollars, which is more like 7 billion rand, is it not? Yeah, so can we just clarify that? I thought it was double what we were spending. But my question is on that one, and I also appreciate it's not an easy question to ask because it involves getting into the minds of the officials that draw up the national budget. But if Thompson is collecting this money, would it actually not be better to spend it yourselves? Because if you give it to government, how do you really know that they're not cutting their budget to actually take into account that they're getting their budget partly financed from you?
You spoke about the number of small businesses that you support. If I remember, I think you said something like you support 3,500. Now, when I think of the country as a whole, and we are now 16 years from a democracy and independence, do you have any future plans for expansion? Because I think really, not that one doesn't appreciate what you do, but one wonders as to whether you have any future plans for expansion in the future. And then on the question of your support for the SMEs, it's on slide 6, on page 6, that you contribute 9,000 per SME for 10 SMEs per province to attend Indaba. All right, when I calculate that, it would seem as if you spend something like over a million rand for each Indaba each year. I wanted to find out what percentage of your annual budget would that be. In other words, I'm trying to find out from what budget are you taking this 1 million for one event. And on page 8 of your presentation, you speak of the second bullet from the bottom of a database of verified SMEs that we have per province. I come from the Eastern Cape. I would very much like to see your database for the Eastern Cape. The reason being that if we know where these SMEs you are assisting are, as members of parliament, it becomes possible and easy for us to actually visit the very businesses that you are talking about, and we can verify for ourselves the success stories that we are talking about. Now, to TBCSA, I also want to add what has been said here, that the presentation is very informative. I do wish, actually, that we had more time to engage this kind of a presentation. But unfortunately, we may not be able to do that. You speak of tourism surpassing industries like oil and so on and so forth. In South Africa, it is also said to have surpassed mining. I don't mention that. I wonder why. And I wanted to say also, the question of prioritizing tourism as an industry, particularly because it is contributing so much to the GDP in this country, is something that this committee has raised a number of times. Even in our debates, we have raised it, because we also feel exactly the same, that actually the budget that we have is hardly enough to take us further. But if we had a bigger budget, particularly to assist the upcoming businesses, those that are starting or those that are just still struggling to rise, it would probably assist if government had a way of assisting. You then speak of a tourism bank, and
that makes me quite curious as to how actually you see that idea working. Maybe we need to look into that and see how practical it could be and how it could help, you know, particularly those who need assistance. Is it something, are you thinking of something like the land bank, for example, in this country, which is assisting people in various areas, particularly in the area of food security and so on and so forth. But then we would have to avoid the bureaucracy that goes with it. Because although, for instance, we have the land bank, you find that out there, the people who really need the assistance of the land bank are not the ones who actually benefit from that. So I'm just trying to agree with you on some of the ideas that we have raised here, in particular with prioritizing the tourism industry. You are even suggesting there on your conclusion that it should be at the highest level of government. It should receive the presidential focus. Yeah, I think I agree totally with that. But whether it will happen or not, that is one issue. But I think if we work together and we work together towards achieving what you are saying there, that is you, the private sector, us, the members of parliament, we might probably, after some time, influence government to ensure that, you know, that this area is also recognized and assisted effectively. Thomson. Yes, Thomson. No, this is the chairperson, just by the way. It's a levy. It's a levy structure. This is a levy. It collects a levy. But strange enough, in your abbreviation, you leave the L, which to me is the key word for that structure. Why is that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to welcome the presentation. TBCSA. You know,
good question.
I heard about your contribution, but with all the contributions, my worry is, it seems as if the development is focusing at people that is that accommodations, all those things. Now I'm thinking of a person that there down in the Rondava who is making beadwork. And I think these places need to be, you can make it beautiful with the beads and all those things. How can you impact on those disadvantaged communities, those people that are busy with the beadwork, that they don't have anywhere to go, they don't get any stipend anywhere. How can you impact on those smaller businesses? And also, I think also in this accommodation and everywhere else, you will need at least people there. We're talking of people that want to see South Africa at its best, and also want to hear the stories of South Africa, then how can you then again impact on those indigenous people that are really there at home, that can come to these accommodations and tell their stories and do all those things? That also goes to tech. I think that also can fit well if you can also then look at those indigenous. We've talked about this map is very beautiful. It's talking of Mapungubwe, it's talking of Mijaji and all those areas. Recently, at those places, we could see the need of a development of our communities, of those indigenous people, to see to it that they are developed financially, they can do something if they can be helped. So I think I just want to hear from you. What can be done for those people? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Maluleke, and let me request, for instance, for an extra 50 minutes for up to 12:45. Is that okay with you? In fact, there is much more interest than we anticipated. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. On the Tourism Business Council, I want to check with them on 34 million jobs across the world. How many jobs have been created in South Africa, for only South Africa? The other one is, in which provinces have you had your successful career guidance? And what can make you proud to say you have developed youth on your strategies? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, perhaps I think let us allow for responses now. In as far as that as the tourists that come to South Africa to buy, Limpopo is having a plan of building a big mega shop for African tourists to go there and buy, and they regard that as tourism. I just wanted to add to some of the understandings. I mean, the thing is that there could be different definitions, but that's how they understand it in Limpopo. Okay, over to you. Let us start with the question was around the board, the product development, TEP. Let us start with TEP and then end with the TPS, CSA.
Thank you, Chair. The first question was about traditional leaders and friction with municipalities. I just want to note that I did not talk about that one. That was
welcome to the committee.
Majaji brought that up. We have had one or two lodges who are already running well as community-based and having been successful, and we're just supporting them. One of them is in Mpumalanga, but we've not encountered and been involved with this issue.
And in
Eastern Cape. Sorry, I must introduce Lisa Hosking next to me, the General Manager Operations of TEP, and to answer the next, to preempt the answer to the next question, the four managers at TEP are all women. I'm the only male. But on the board, to go to your next question, this board was constructed by, as an advisor, the minister started this board up. There has been a note taken on your issue already by the current board, and they're looking at bringing in more females on the board. Cindy Mabaso is one of the names that came up that is being targeted to come reserve on this board. And the new DG has already asked for a change and a fresh new look on the board. So I think you will see a change there. Third one is a very interesting question about the traditional product offering of South Africa as the Kruger Park, Table Mountain, Sun City, Winelands. And the understanding is perhaps mistaken that we will not do more of that. What we're saying is we need to build on that. We're saying the current numbers of tourists are here in the country already is a remarkable achievement over the last 10 years, the increase. And it was based on this, the traditional offering. What we are noting on the world stage is, for a few reasons, perhaps since 9/11 and world disasters, that the current tourist is saying we want more than just sightseeing and looking at sights. We want to connect with people on an emotional and spiritual level. And so we're layering it with the deeper meaning of tourism, and we think it will be more longer lasting. So we say maybe we can attract more numbers over and above what we're getting with this new offering. We've tested it in Paris, London, and Berlin, and the response has been extremely positive. Then you spoke of another very deep question, that the value for money issue with TEP and what returns with no competition. I need to just confirm that what the Business Trust has commissioned now is an evaluation, a study by Mark Data, who will present to the board later this year in November about that very issue, knowing that TEP has now gone down a new road of product development and market access. How are each of the initiatives working? How would you measure the returns? And are the SMMEs truly benefiting from this, or could it be done better? I think the board has asked for that. We've commissioned the study. The Business Trust is doing it. And there will be a report to the board in November. And I guess post that, this committee could get the benefit of that. I'd like to ask Lisa to just comment on the next one. So you hear other gender voices as well from TEP. Lisa can comment on the criteria for SMMEs, the failure rate, and the financial contribution of SMMEs.
Thank you. Before we register tourism small businesses, we take them through a range of assessment criteria. The first and one of the most important criteria is that they become legal businesses. So it doesn't really matter at this stage how small they are. We do require them to become legal. If they're not legal businesses, we will help them to become legal. We then take them through a range of scorings, which is called the business sophistication measure. And that's a range of 15 criteria that ranges from, do they operate from home, do they have office premises, do they have a matric certificate, do they have postgraduate certificates. And we then see where they fit in TEP's graduation model. So that will tell us, do they require tourism awareness training or do they require mentorship. So that's some of the criteria we look at. We also look at, we have a limited budget. So we look at enterprise, we need to make very difficult decisions in terms of where we spend the money. So does a business display some opportunity for growth with assistance from TEP? If they don't display any opportunities for growth, perhaps they need to be in a different sector. Perhaps we should not be putting money into that enterprise. So we look at what their needs are, what their requirements are, and what their opportunities for growth are. The SME contribution at this point, we don't require them to contribute towards the cost of training. We have something that's called the Business Development Fund, which is a very small grant where the SME pays 50% for the cost of a service such as marketing material, attendance at Indaba or ITB, or the cost of grading, and we pay the other 50%. It's a very small fund. So at this point, that's what they contribute. The failure rate is something that we've just started to measure. We've been in operation for 2 years now. So over the past year, what we've measured is the failure rate of our high-potential clients, or those at the MDP level. And what we found is that, Silva put up the stats, is that they're doing really, really well. Most of them over the past 2 years, which was a recession, have actually grown in turnover. And only, I think it was 5, have actually declined in profitability. We haven't seen any failures at the high level at this point. But obviously it's something that we track. We have a database of about close to 4,000 SMEs that we track on a monthly basis. The share government and... do you want me to answer that? Okay.
Thank you, Lisa. In terms of the cost sharing between government and business trust, it's roughly 50-50. But the important issue is that it is dropping by about 30% per annum over the last 3 years. And we did produce the first annual report, and the minister was there when we launched it. That was for the 2008 year, where TEP had a budget of 86 million. In the year following that, which we've just and 86 million delivered 110% of all the targets set by the Business Trust and Department, and the saving. So we used the money very carefully so that we could roll it over to the next year. The second year's budget, which we ended last year, we also produced 110% of all targets, as you saw. It dropped to 69 million, again roughly 50-50. This year, which we just started in July, has dropped to 41 million. So I want to answer the other question that came up about how do we support more businesses if national government and business are saying the budget gets lower. And there are challenges in that regard. All the minister said is try and raise more funds from the private sector. And for the next 2 years, you really got to run on a 50 million budget on average. And so this period from now for the next 3 years, you'd say we'd average a 50 million per annum. But we as TEP have got to go and find this private sector funding. If we want to exceed it, we must get more private sector funding into support of businesses.
But we've got 130 million for World Cup tickets.
Sorry?
But we've got 130 million for World Cup tickets. It's unbelievable. Okay.
So I'm answering it very directly and giving you the numbers because we'll have annual reports. They will be audited and you will see all the numbers. So in the context of where we are, the future plans for expansion then, ma'am, you said we have 3,500 small businesses now, and we think this is going to double in the next 3 years because we're doing a study with the Finmark Trust. We've invested a small amount to go and assess how many actual small businesses there are in tourism in the whole country, and they are doing one on SMMEs in general. And we said, if we just pay for a small amount, can you tell us, of your total SMMEs in the country, which ones are tourism, where are they, what are they, what's the nature of them? So we're investing in research to feed back to us. We think that number might be double. But with the fund going the wrong way, the number being double means we have to spend less on more people. And that is the challenge we have. So the whole issue is now to try to focus on the next 2 years to get SMMEs to start paying. That's the only other solution. So whereas we are using taxpayers' money and private sector money to support, and at this stage they're paying a small amount for marketing materials, for example, all their training is done free. Now, skills development is the key to uplifting people's performance. That's what we believe. And it's not just classroom training. So the question is, how do we get more funding in to get more skills development done over the next 3 years? The slide, again, it answers the question on the 9,000 rands per SMME to attend in Daba. That's accommodation, transport, meals, stand, and the tourism authority also assists them where we can't go beyond that. So you're right, Indaba is a solid, sustainable platform, but what we're doing is at Indaba, TEP is actively selling these businesses as clusters. So the story you saw is we're also promoting them with the big players, and they don't have to wait on one-on-one meetings. Page 8 of the database, you said. The Eastern Cape, if you're keen on that, we'll do even better. We'll have our provincial manager, Kona Makwazima, if I can put him in touch with you, to meet with you directly in the Eastern Cape. He looks after the Eastern Cape, and share with you all the SMMEs, the database there, and to arrange to perhaps take you to the ones you would like to see. So through TEP Eastern Cape, you're welcome to meet with Kona. We'll arrange that for you. And then the last question was on beaders and crafters. We are told that that is not part of the tourism business. That's really arts and crafts. But despite that, we have said around the clusters, if they are performing artists or crafters, can we bring them into the experience, like take the visitors to show them how they make these crafts and then try and get sales for them? Now, that's a way to do it, not directly. We, having said that, we selected some of the best crafters in the country, perhaps the top 20, and they range all the way from Groblersdal to Nelspruit to Upington. And we've secured a partnership with Tourvest at one of their airport stores to place this product in there, and they've got the first sales. So that's our way of indirectly supporting the crafters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll also start answering my questions on the last point that Siva touched on, where you asked, because essentially the question you're asking is around enterprise development. And I want to start by saying that the work that we do as the TBCSA, essentially the private sector, we are guided by the BEE scorecard. The seven principles that guides, that really is the cornerstone of the BEE scorecard. Specifically, we focus around enterprise development, around social investment, and skills development. This question around the crafters, Siva is correct. The crafters are not necessarily seen and regarded, at least from a government point of view, as part of travel and tourism. But needless to say, we as a sector, in the same way that we say tourism is everybody's business, we see crafters as very much part of our industry and our sector. We embrace it because it forms part of the attraction, the experience that we package and we offer to tourists. In that spirit, the example that Siva has given, two of us is one of the, it's actually the largest tour operating group in this country. The CEO of two of us is my chairperson of the TBC board, and is an empowered company as well. And so as part of their business, they have retail operations in most airports, and the largest concentration being at OR Tambo International Airport. They have gone into the deal that Siva is talking about, where they have they're buying crafts from some of the community trust and community projects as far as Mtubatuba up in northern KwaZulu-Natal, the ladies who produce the Nema, some baskets out of the Nema out of the St. Lucia area, some of the crafters around Oristat up in the Three Roundabouts area, in Ladenburg, Mashishin, those areas, here in KwaZulu-Natal, you find them in those retail operations. So you are no longer finding a whole lot of crafters that are coming outside of South Africa. Our own products are beginning to make their way to the retail operations. And so we see it as a pure business deal. Two of us has gone into it, they've seen a business opportunity, and they brought in the network and the distribution and the facilities, and the ladies and the men who produce these products, they have no access to the market. All they know is how to do these things. And so you find it two people who each have a different thing to offer. And that's one of the success stories that one can mention. And I do know that also at provincial level, there's some specific, at an individual level. We're talking here at a large corporation level. But at the individual product level, a lot of the guest houses and lodges, if you go into rural areas, they package, they showcase some of those products. And that's really very much enterprise development. You're assisting, giving a channel and a market access to somebody who doesn't know anything about how good the product that they're producing it is, and that it can actually help them to earn a living in a way. And, slowly but surely, we get into that space. And one of the I know that with the two of us operation, they part of the exercise was to be able to, one, organize these people to begin to produce this craft as a collective, because one of the things about having a retail giant like that being linked up to you is that you must have constant supply. And that's one of the difficulties that SMEs normally have, that they produce these things, we look at them, they're quite beautiful, but that retail operation at OR Tambo needs a regular supply of this product. So part of the benefit is that those people get exposed to the business of producing what they're producing, and that there is a quality that has to be maintained, but most importantly, they begin to grow, and they move into the next level. They're no longer crafters, they're actually business crafters. And that's part of what enterprise development is all about. And so that's our contribution, Chairperson, that our members are individually making that. On to the other questions. I don't have the specific figures around jobs that are created by our sector in South Africa, but it's in one of my slide presentations. I just don't remember the numbers, and I don't want to guess. But if you have a look at the impact where tourism is happening in this country, one of the things that I like to say is that unlike any other economic sector, and it's not simply because I'm in this industry and I will promote it dead or alive, the reality of it is if you look at where tourism happens, unlike manufacturing and other sectors, tourism happens in places where people who live in those localities, they would have no other form of economic activity if it was not for the tourism operators. You have a look at the places like, look at Northern Cape. You have a look at what the Kalahari National Park, what it does in that area, which is 260 kilometers away from any nearest town. It is an economic hub. It has created a hub for those sand people and those rural communities that live so far away from Upington as a town. You know, you go and look at, you go to Limpopo, which is my province, where I know very well. You look at people who live in around Makuya, up in Pafuru area. If it was not for the Kruger National Park, if it was not for that gate between the Makuya gate, the Pafuru gate, and the Tulamana gate, there's a lot of communities, rural communities that live in that area. But because of the tourist activity that comes from Sand Park, the Kruger National Park on the other side of the border, other lodges have developed in that area. You know, I know Wilderness Safari has developed lodges around that area. Suddenly, it's a buzzing activity. The crafters are getting a piece of the action because of the lodge that is there. Guides have been employed who have studied guiding into national parks, but they don't have any form of employment. Suddenly, they can work for national parks, but they can also work for the private lodges that are around the area. You have a look at what tourism has done in terms of the whole Sabi Sabi area, around Bushbuck Ridge, around Hood Strait, around the area all the way to Komochi Port and the bottom part of the Kruger National Park. All those communities, their livelihood has changed simply by virtue of having a national park around it that has brought up private reserves that are around it. And it, you're suddenly looking at Mpumalanga. Really, the economy of Mpumalanga revolves around the Kruger National Park and tourism. And that's the kind of thing. So I'm trying to get around the figures because I don't have a figure that I can mention to you right now. I don't want to guess the kind of impact that we have. The next question you asked was around the career guidance. We just started this at the back of a program that the National Department of Tourism has started. It's called the National Tourism Careers Expo, which they started 2 years ago, and they have this exhibition in Durban every year. They decided as a department that they will do it for 3 years at a time in one location, and they started with Kosovo.
Okay.
And the aim is really aiming at beginning to cultivate tourism culture, tourism education among the youth. And they're looking at those who are still going at school level. And part of that exercise is that they expose them to career opportunities in travel and tourism. They expose them to the business of travel and tourism. Our members go into the exhibition area, they display, and they engage with the youth when they come through the exhibition area. And the children and school-going learners from other provinces are bused into Durban every year. So that it's one thing to talk to them about tourism, but they must also experience it. So they get into the buses, they get to stay in a hotel. And in that way, all the pieces begin to come together. So where we come in as a TBCSA, we then said, if this is where the government is facing, we will then go to the next level where we know that they are unemployed graduates, there are those who are about to finish their studies in tourism, and now they are looking out to see what are the employment opportunities out there. So in the last year, we did this. Last year was the second year that we've done it. We did it specifically with institutions of higher learning. We're not doing it at a mass level. So we targeted institutions of higher learning that we know are teaching tourism. And it was we went into partnership with the School of Tourism in Johannesburg as part of the University of Johannesburg. And we also went into the University of Pretoria, which is also known for the tourism courses. And then we also went into Cape Town here. We were in partnership with the School of Tourism, the hotel school, which is based in the waterfront. And last year we went to PE. You know, it's a pilot study, which we said we're going to try it over 3 years period. First year we know we have some lessons that we will learn. And then second year, and then of course this year, the last year, that we will go to the same institution so that we get some lessons and we begin to come up with a model of how we can expand it to touch institutions like last year we tried to go to Limpopo, for instance, the University of Limpopo, and we struggled. One, because there isn't sustained teaching of travel and tourism in the university. So it's something that we're trying out as our way of trying to reaching out to the community out there to pass on this knowledge of travel and tourism. Now, the next question was around the land claims, the friction. You mentioned the issue around what is the trend, what is the status in terms of frictions between the traditional leaders and the communities, especially where land is in the hands of traditional leaders. It is something that exists. We know about that. And, I mean, in KwaZulu-Natal is one area where those frictions are known to exist. Limpopo is one of those areas. And the friction is simply because the foundation of all that is the lack of understanding of what the prospects are if this land that the traditional leader is presiding over, and if there's a section of the community of trust that want to get involved in a travel and tourism business, for instance, into that space. So it is, and the friction is really not about the traditional leaders and the communities. It's about what to do a lot of time. What causes that friction is what to do with that land. For example, here we will give an example of what has gone in Pondolet, in the area around in the Eastern Cape, past Umtata. In the past year, there's been tensions between whether that whole the Umkambati game reserve, is it supposed to be devoted to be a nature reserve, or must it be open for mining? So the tension is often what economic activity that must happen there, and that's what causes the tension between the traditional leader and the community. Communities often will say, we want to, we understand travel and tourism, we think we need to give this, go into partnership with a private sector venture like Wilderness Safari or And Beyond, or we must give our land to national parks because we know this is what's going to come out of it. But then you find other sections of the community being approached by mining operations that comes and offer, and that's really a lot of times what happens in that space. And this is why I said earlier on, it's where government needs to provide the leadership. But you've got to provide leadership with a community that understands fully. When they say they want to go for mining, they understand what is the prospect for them, the return on investment if they go for mining, but equally the same. Because you don't want people who simply go into travel and tourism under the pretense that they're going to make a lot of money. And then what happens? 3 years down the line, when the returns are slow to come in, then they want to retract. And they don't want to get involved in that space anymore. So that's one of the things that really happens as such. And it scares investors away in the case of travel and tourism. The other question was around, just a comment you mentioned, Ma, that says, yes, indeed, travel and tourism is the fastest growing economic sector globally. Yes, in South Africa, it even surpasses mining. And for me, you don't have to listen to me or anybody who's passionate about travel and tourism, how important this sector is. You read the papers, you follow what happens in the economy in this country. Every day you hear about mines retrenching people. It's a figure that you and I come across every day. And those people who have been let out of jobs, they need to find jobs somewhere else. A lot of times they have no other option, other sectors they need to be able to get into. Manufacturing has been going through some troubles lately as well. And so, we as a country, we need to look at other economic sectors that have the opportunity. And where we sit at the moment, we have a sector that is contributing between 8% and 10% into the GDP of South Africa. And we are simply saying, let it be given a chance, because it has never been given a chance to make a contribution. We have difficulties as well, just like every other sector, but the opportunity needs to be explored. The question around, I want to deal with the difficult ones later, around the tourism, the Thompson levy. I think the question was to say, are we not concerned that the government is preview to what could come out of TOMSA, and then by that they will reduce the amount. We don't give money directly to government. The money goes to South African tourism. That's number one.
They also fund that.
No, that's true, but they have no preview of how much money we're going to collect, because it's based on what we collect. So we don't give it upfront. We collect the TOMSA levies on a monthly basis, and it's only when we collect that once a quarter we pass it over to South African tourism. So even if they had to make a prediction, they will actually fall short, because like this year, if you ask me what at the end of the year, will I give them 100 million, I don't know. All I know is that we've been going through an economic recession, the chances are the money is going to be less. So my experience in the time, and I see that you were there, you've been there when Thompson was there, my experience is that I haven't seen trends that have been reducing South African tourism's budget based on that amount of money. In fact, the opposite has been happening. Because they don't know how much money they can expect from us, the money, when we give it to them eventually, they tend to put it into what we call the strategic project. For instance, the 100 million that we gave them last year is the money that they added on to the World Cup campaign that they needed to go into. It was when we were able to confirm the money that they could be coming, and that was around March, that they then went to commit to that global campaign with the CNN, with Eurosport, all the channels, so that they can fight an extensive campaign about South Africa before the World Cup. So that's the one part. But the other assurance for you in terms of this issue is that we have a management structure. We meet with South African tourism 4 times a year. And in those meetings, we agree on targets, on things that we would love to see them doing as a private sector, over and above what they have agreed with government. We will say to them, this is what you have agreed with government. Yes, it's within the broad policies, but this is what we would love you to be able to do. And so we monitor that. When we meet them on a regular basis, we monitor how far have they gone in terms of implementing what we've agreed on. Because it shows, if they are doing that, it shows directly in our results as a private sector. Otherwise, we will struggle. And we will go into the market if the money that we put in and the activity they do is directed in different markets and we go somewhere else, the returns won't be able to balance. So we have a formal agreement with South African Tourism. We just don't give the money like that. And the MOU we signed with specific targets of what it's going to be able to do. Secondly, we influence the business strategy. They present it to us before. And then every quarter when we have a board meeting, they report to us how they have gone. And we really go through a rigorous kind of discussion where private sector is very unhappy in terms of where they are going. There was a question around the tourism bank. What model are we having in mind? The idea of how it works. It's early days now. It is something that we picked up. That's why I gave the example of Grofin out of Rwanda. We're investigating that to see how best a facility like that can work. But one thing is very clear. We think it must begin it must use different criteria from what your commercial banks use. If I have to go, at the moment, the reality is that a lot of our enterprise, whether big or small, if you want to raise money because you want to build a hotel or you want to buy buses because you want to expand your business into travel and tourism to become a tour operator, when you arrive at the bank asks you questions that they will ask a manufacturer or a mining operator because they don't understand us as a sector. They will be asking you of returns of 2 years. They'll say, I'm giving you this money, we want our returns in 2 years' time. But one thing for certain is that this bank needs to look at different criteria. One specific one will be a longer lead time in terms of returns, you know, which they need to build into that criteria for funding people. And they must also be built in an understanding of how travel and tourism operates. It's a cyclical sector. It really, really gets affected by very, very small things. All you need is a series of so-called xenophobic attacks in South Africa, the numbers go down. People simply treat their travel like that. You know, so it's a bank that needs to take those into consideration because the existing commercial facilities don't take that into consideration. They simply ask you, what are your projections? Can you give me my money in 2 years' time? And if you can't, they don't give you the money. They'll give you the runaround. And that's what we just have those kind of ideas of how the thing needs to operate. And what I want to also share with the committee is that this idea of a tourism bank, by the way, it's not coming from the TBCSA. We, in the last consultation process with the new tourism sector strategy by the minister, this is something that came out from the SMEs themselves. They've been saying, Minister, we are finding it very difficult to access funds out there. Please consider some sort of a facility that can be very tuned up to our specific sector and our unique needs. To make sure that we really get out there and make some business fun. So it's not really us you know, driving this idea.
We are left with no time.
Yeah. The last one was around the stats, Chairperson. The stats is very simple. I agree with the member there that the international arrivals are 2.5 million overnight. The issue is how do we get around that? The African tourists are as much as tourists. It's about whether how much of business are we generating out of them. And it's something we're debating here with SA Tourism as an industry to see how best. We don't disregard the African tourists, but we make sure that we make them part of the travel and tourism sector, but we harvest you know, enough out of them and make them part of the arrivals in our country. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think everyone would still want to engage, but unfortunately, time is up. We cannot manufacture any more time, and unfortunately. But once more, let me thank the presenters. That is Mam Robin from Tourism Business Council, and for that presentation together with Mr. Sivopile, the Chief Executive Officer of Tourism Enterprise Partnerships, going together with Ms. Lisa Hosking, General Manager Operations Tourism Enterprise Promotion. I think you did a very good job, and we are going to be in contact with you as we develop our program. We've been to a strategy meeting about a month ago, and one of the things was that we've got to develop tourism, assist each other in developing tourism, because it's not an issue of government should go on its own, and then it's also not an issue that the private sector should go on its own, but we've got to maximize the synergies of the country towards a bigger tourism industry. Thank you very much. Thank you.